From Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents A Conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to the special pre-election edition of the Sunday Spin for November the 6th, 2016. Welcome to our countdown as we get closer to Tuesday, Election Day 2016. Time to grab that Sunday paper, get that cup of coffee, and we'll do our best to get your week off to a good start. Speaking of a good start... Folks, was the cast of Hamilton. I mean, that what tells you, Susan, what tells you more what great spirit there is when even the Hamilton cast can engage in Go Cubs Go.
Oh, it's been so cool, hasn't it?
It is. And I see the CTA is going to decorate some buses and L cars with the W flag.
You got
for
it,
the
just for
week.
This week only,
yes.
Right?
I mean, what can be better than this?
Not much.
And as I was telling Susan off the air, you know, you stressed so much over that Game 7, one of the best baseball games ever played. Roger Angel, the veteran 96-year-old baseball writer, writing in The New Yorker, just exuberant about what a great baseball game it was. And it had everything in it. And now we go from that stress of the Cubs winning to the stress of Tuesday and Election Day. But I'm still going to let the W fly for a little bit here.
Mm-hmm.
This is just tremendous. Did you make it to the parade?
Well, I was here, so I was able to view it from our seventh floor, and very cool. I had friends and family at the rally, and that was its own good time.
Yes.
Good time trying to get out of the city, right?
Yeah, those trains, the metro stations looked a little bit packed trying to get out of town on Friday. But
yeah. Word was that at one point people were being told they had to wait 3 hours for the next outbound train.
3 hours.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, but I did see somebody tweeted out from Metro saying, we're a little bit delayed, so just why don't you enjoy the city just a little bit more before you decide to come home?
Right. And the weird thing is the traffic wasn't quite as bad as they thought. I mean, yes, there were lots of cars out like any Friday, but I don't know. I think the car might have been the way to go.
I feel sorry for those that were coming inbound to the city in the afternoon because there was a incident that had the Eisenhower shut down at Independence on Friday afternoon.
Right. We were headed home that way and saw that. And here these people are thinking, well, I'll come down downtown after all of the action and just enjoy the atmosphere. And here's your expressway shut down. You never know.
That's the great thing about Chicago traffic. You never know. You never know at all. But yeah, what a great game. I watched it from my perch at the Billy Goat because I wanted to make sure that the curse got stomped.
Nice.
And I even perhaps I'm giving something away here by telling Sam Sianis that I actually smuggled in 3 bottles of champagne to officially kill the curse. Now, the trouble is, I went to go get the champagne during the 8th inning when they were winning. And by the time I got back, the score was tied.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, it's all my fault. Once again, that's the reason why I don't go to playoff games, mm-hmm. because I don't want to blame myself for anything. But yes, the champagne got sprayed, the goat got sprayed, and the curse is gone. And now we can start the clock over again on how many years for a championship. But, you know, what a bizarre weekend. You had the Cubs win. You had the Bears, actually, who were heavily favored to lose, beat the Vikings. Then you look to last night at Soldier Field yesterday afternoon, and you've got Ireland playing the New Zealand Blacks in rugby. And I can't tell you how you score anything in rugby, but Ireland won 40-29, I believe it was. First time they had beaten the New Zealand Blacks in 111 years.
Yeah.
Over at Soldier Field. 60,000 people there. And I warned my friends downtown last night to be prepared for onslaught number 2 after all of the Cubs celebrations of the week.
Bigger drought than the Cubs, huh?
Yes, believe it or not. And lots of people in for that rugby game. I was very surprised at late Friday after covering the U.S. Senate debate with Mark Kirk and Tammy Duckworth, and out on the street there were still all these people with green rugby jerseys on, and that's when it finally dawned on me that there was this big match that they were having over at Soldier Field.
It's crazy, and the weather's adding to the festive atmosphere.
Oh, it definitely is. I mean, we're supposed to be in the high 60s mm-hmm. later today?
72.
Or we're crossing over to 70s?
That's what my sources are telling me.
Well, I'll go with your sources. That's we still got good grilling weather for tonight then. And Blackhawks won a big game last night against the Dallas Stars, 3-2, closing out the game, killing a penalty. And Dallas had even lifted the goalie and still was able to survive 3-2. That's 5 in a row for the Blackhawks, and it's also it's now a home-and-home game because the Blackhawks play the Stars tonight at home. And, of course, you can catch all of that action here with John and Troy here on WGN Radio, where you'll find all of the Blackhawks games all season. And just about ready to flip the Cubs lid for the Blackhawks lid now. I mean, they're in full form, playoff form. Absolutely. I mean, it's just really great. And we don't have to worry about a Bears game today. They get a bye. So after working so hard beating the Vikings, they get a little bit of rest.
And yes, and we get some rest too. Now, if the Bulls could kind of get it going a little bit more,
they're the ones that, I mean, they started out pretty good, but they had a rough night against the Knicks, and also a rough night last night against the Pacers. But hey, it's a Sunday. Let's enjoy it. Great weather. Great, and great. We get an extra hour to sleep too. That sure helped me this
morning.
Me
too.
I think we all needed it after the week that we had. Well, Susan Berkus is here to keep us up on all the news. Sam's not here. That's why Susan's going to take care of that with the sports. Sam's probably recovering from a big week, you know. We got to let him have a day off. Producer Jasmine is here to field your phone calls at 312-981-7200. That's also our text line. 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin. We're on Twitter at @SundaySpin. And engineer Bob is here in the Allstate Showcase studio counting the early votes that have already been cast. Well, remember, as always, you can find our shows on WGNradio.com. You can also get our podcasts at iTunes. Just search for my name, Rick Pearson. Well, up ahead today, we're going to begin a special pre-election roundtable after Susan brings us the 7:30 news update. We'll be speaking to all very good friends of the show. We'll have Pat Brady, the former chairman of the Illinois Republican Party. We'll also be joined by David Yepsen. David is now the recently retired director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University at Carbondale. And we'll also talk to Bob Sector. And Bob is my former colleague on the Tribune's political team, who was recently named as director of investigations for the Better Government Association. We'll spend some time talking about the money-filled races for the legislature, the state comptroller. Then we'll shift to the U.S. Senate race. And then finally, we'll focus on the big marquee, the battle for the White House. That's all coming up, but first it's time for a quick break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. We're at 7:20 on 7:20 WGN. This is your Sunday Spin. Hope you remembered to turn your clocks back this morning and enjoy that extra hours of sleep. Well, it's time now for our weekly spin through national politics, and to quote a phrase, our long national nightmare is almost over. The race for the presidency entering its final hours amid confusing polls at times, candidates out pushing their base of support and trying to expand it. We had the incident last night in Reno, Nevada, where a protester at a Donald Trump rally had a sign that said Republicans against Trump. Problems escalated. Someone yelled, "There's a gun." Trump was rushed off stage. There was no gun. The protester was taken out of the arena, and Trump resumed his speech 10 minutes later. And the Trump campaign noted that Hillary Clinton had left a Florida rally early because of rain, but that Donald Trump decided to return to the stage because of an assassination attempt. So, yes, we don't believe in exaggerations here in our politics at all, but there is a new Donald Trump ad that's bashing Hillary Clinton for pay-to-play politics and the FBI's investigation.
The Clintons, from dead broke to worth hundreds of millions. So how did Hillary end up filthy rich? Pay-to-play politics. Staggering amounts of cash poured into the Clinton Foundation from criminals, dictators, countries that hate America. Hillary cut deals for donors. Now the FBI has launched a new investigation. After decades of lies and scandal, her corruption is closing in.
I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message.
Now, meanwhile, on the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton getting out as many surrogates as she can to battleground states. President Obama was enlisted as a Clinton surrogate, and he was working to get out the vote in North Carolina. Well, how important is North Carolina? This is what Obama told Democrats.
We don't win this election, potentially, if we don't win North Carolina. So I hate to put a little pressure on you, but the fate of the republic rests on your shoulders. The fate of the world is teetering, and you, North Carolina, are going to have to make sure that we push it in the right direction.
Certainly no exaggerations on either side as we enter these final hours. So Trump is focusing attacks on Clinton over the expanded FBI investigation of former disgraced Congressman Anthony Weiner's computer. Democrats are criticizing FBI Director James Comey. House Democratic Leader Nancy Pelosi of California says Comey has a double standard.
When it came to the hacking by the Russians, that the highest confidence of our intelligence community says the Russians did this. I know it privately because of being hacked by the Russians. And he says, well, it's too close to the election to talk about that. And yet it's not too close to the election to talk about the emails that he says may not be significant. So I think he made a mistake. And these jobs, if you're not in it for a while, you can't take the heat.
Now, Hillary Clinton's also come out with a new ad. It features Monique Louise. Now, who is Monique Louise? She was the original little girl in the famed Daisy ad that warned of nuclear destruction.
The fear of nuclear war that we had as children, I never thought our children would ever have to deal with that again. And to see that coming forward in this election is really scary.
Trump asked three times.
Three times, why can't we use nuclear weapons?
I want to be unpredictable.
What safeguards are there to stop any president who may not be stable from launching a nuclear attack?
The commander-in-chief is the commander-in-chief.
That's former CIA Chief Michael Hayden at the end of that ad. Out on the campaign trail, Donald Trump continuing to go after reporters, singling them out by name. Now, here's NBC's Trump correspondent Katie Tour describing on MSNBC what it's been like to cover Trump and how Trump once again says things that he knows aren't true.
Donald Trump was complaining about this idea that he has that the press doesn't show his crowds, which is just factually untrue. The cameras that are there, there's a number of cameras. He sees them all. Oftentimes when he's playing to the camera and saying we don't move our cameras to show these crowds, the cameras are all looking in opposite directions showing the crowds. And not to mention, we are penned in. The campaign doesn't allow the cameras to even leave to go get more crowd pictures. We also have Jacob Rascone, who talks to voters on a daily basis, Trump voters on a daily basis, up and down crowds on MSNBC all day long. So the idea that we're not showing this movement is just factually incorrect.
That's MSNBC's Katie Tour. She's the NBC reporter who's been covering the Donald Trump campaign. Now, you remember how I talked about candidates expanding their voter base? Well, here's Donald Trump getting some Bollywood experience to seek the vote of Indians and Hindus.
The Indian and Hindu community will have a true friend in the White House. We will defeat radical Islamic terrorism. I look forward to working with Prime Minister Modi.
Abhi Bar, Trump, Sarkar.
We love the Hindus. We love India.
I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message.
Yes, folks, that is a real Donald Trump ad. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin on this beautiful Sunday in downtown Chicago at the Allstate Showcase Studio and Tribune Tower, where we're flying the W. Up ahead, we'll be doing a special pre-election political roundtable. We'll be featuring Bob Sector, Director of Investigations for the Better Government Association, Pat Brady, former chairman of the Illinois Republican Party, and Dave Yepsen, the recently retired director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University at Carbondale.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson, and this is your pre-election edition of the Sunday Spin. By the way, it's 7:35 Central Standard Time. Just a reminder, if you didn't flip your clocks this morning. We're going to have a roundtable for the next 90 minutes to kind of parse through perhaps all the blast of all of the rhetoric of the commercials, all that's gone on. And on our roundtable, joining me here in the Allstate Showcase Studio is Pat Brady, the former chairman of the state Republican Party. Pat, thanks for getting up this morning.
Good morning. Great morning out, isn't it?
It's beautiful. Well, you know, it's kind of nice to have that sun back in the morning. It was starting to look a little bleak, but thank goodness that the Cubs kept things sunny. Also here in the Allstate Showcase Studio is Bob Sector, my former colleague at the Tribune, who's now the Director of Investigations for the Better Government Association. Bob, thank you so much for joining me.
Well, nice to be here again back in Trunk Tower.
Of course. Yeah, see, we have the snide button that we're going to push. It's known as the panic button, but we have the snide button. And on the phone is David Yepsen. And congratulations, David, for your recent retirement as director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University at Carbondale.
It's good to be with you, Rick.
I appreciate it very much. And, gentlemen, I wanted to start out the morning by talking about perhaps the thing that's most pervasive when it comes to mailbox flyers, robocalls, and TV ads among the voters in Illinois, and that would be the race for these targeted seats in the Illinois General Assembly. There are, of the 118 House seats up for election, there are 20 or 48 that are contested, but literally there's two dozen of those that are considered as targeted or perhaps protected. In the Illinois State Senate, of the 59 Senate seats, 13 are contested, but truly only 7 of them are targeted. And what we're seeing is this massive influx of money, a money race that's helped fueled by Republican Governor Bruce Rauner and some of his wealthy allies, Democrats working with organized labor and allies with the civil trial attorneys trying to match those dollars. But I have to ask the question, when you get to the point where, and this is figures through the end of October from money raised January 1st, when you get to the point where you have a race that we have here on the northwest side of Chicago, veteran state representative Republican Mike McAuliffe of Chicago, the legislature's only Republican, running against Democrat Mary Marwig, over $4.5 million for one of 118 seats in the Illinois General Assembly. Pat, I'll start with you. Is this out of control?
Well, I think let's take a step back, and I think when you went through the listing of the really relatively few actual contested races, it goes to points to a bigger problem when that ridiculous Supreme Court ruling that threw out the effort to have a redistricting reform. We have these kind of, these few number of races because these are gerrymandered districts and there's no contest. So I think it's a bigger problem than just money. We have a very unfair system or unfair way to elect our representatives. Now, insofar as the money, yeah, it's a lot of money and it's an obscene amount of money. But the reality is for Republicans, this is the first time they've ever been able to match what the Democrats would do. Now, should you look to the source of money? Is it worse that the public sector unions and the trial attorneys that control the Democratic money, is that worse than what's coming from Republicans? I don't know. You can make that value judgment. But for Republicans, for the first time in my lifetime, certainly when I was party chairman, we can actually match the Democrats, particularly late in the game, days like today when we can get the vote out.
Bob?
Well, the fascinating thing to me about it is, okay, so in the House, Mike Madigan has 71 seats, and you need 60 to have a majority.
60 for a majority, 71 right. For a veto-proof
majority. And in the Senate, the Democrats have 39 seats, and you need 30 for a majority of that.
And,
is my math right there?
And 36 for a veto-proof majority.
And there really is.
This is why we sat next to each other, because I would have to fill in the blanks for him all the time.
There really hasn't been a veto-proof majority. It's a numbers game. There's the Republicans have always been able to pick off one or two.
And you had some recalcitrant Democrats
right.
in the House,
right.
for example, like Jack Franks, who's now
right.
he's not running for re-election. He is actually running in McHenry County
right.
for county board chairman.
And Franks was a quasi-Republican anyway.
Well, it's a very Republican district.
And so the reality is you're spending huge amounts of money to pick off a few seats here and there, and you're still, at the end of the day, and you could have predicted this before the money came in the race, Democrats are still going to control both chambers. And there's still going to be a stalemate because you have a Republican governor. So in the end, there probably is going to be a little more Republican support in the legislature, and it's not going to change the equation any of what's going on. And it raises the question. I mean, if you're looking down the road and saying, okay, well, we pick off a few now, and then in the off year, in 2018, we pick off even more, maybe there's some long-term strategy there. But it is a little insane to be spending that amount of money to basically accomplish very little.
Well, you know what? Let me disagree completely there.
There is
a long-term strategy.
Hold on just 1 second, because I want to get David's thoughts on this as well. David?
Well, I do think that there's a law of diminishing returns at work in all this spending. At some point, you know, if you're getting 5 flyers in your mailbox, does the 6th one make a difference? And I think people are so awash in what amounts to cookie cutter TV ads and radio spots and
and mailers, that I do think there's a saturation point in many of these districts. Down in southern Illinois, where a lot of those several of those battleground districts are, it's just too much. It's five commercials stacked on top of each other on television. They all look about the same. None of them particularly effective or punching through a message. What you don't see is how much of this money is going into what is called the ground game. If one side or the other is more effectively using their resources to knock on doors and do it the old-fashioned way and get people registered. I think historically Democrats have had a little bit of an advantage there over the Republicans, and particularly in the targeting of undecided voters or voters who may not be turning out. One factor is the race for president, whether some Republicans in the state will stay home because they're not happy with Donald Trump. But the point I want to make is that you asked, your initial question was, is it out of control? Yes, it is. There's nothing you can do about it, given the Supreme Court rulings on spending, and yet at some point there is a law of diminishing returns.
Well, and Pat, as you were saying, a long-term strategy, I mean, and back when you were party chairman, that was the kind of the launch of the Fire Madigan, which made for some nice campaign buttons.
Sure.
But, of course, and as you talked about, that was a long-term strategy, was trying to create that impression, because truly Madigan was a name, but people didn't really associate it with anything. And now you must kind of wonder...
He's going to win an Emmy.
Well, yeah, I think you said he's
the one that Donald Trump should have won.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the character who appears most on television these days is House Speaker Michael Madigan. But I mean, when you look at the fact you did not have the resources to be able to drive the message, and again, we're seeing these in multi-million dollar advertising campaigns throughout the state. And it's that unified theme by the Republicans to put a face on Democrats, and that face is Mike Madigan.
And we will see if it works. It didn't work for us, and we didn't think it was going to work in 2012. But what we were trying to do is just raise an awareness in the general public as to who actually controls Springfield, and it's Speaker Madigan, and he has for a long, long time. And I think a couple things to what Bob said. There is a long-term strategy. In a year where we, as Republicans, face gale force headwinds to win House races, if we pick up 3, 4, 5, maybe 6 seats, that is a huge, huge win for Republicans, Jim Durkin and Governor Rauner. And if we do that, to me, it's the beginning of the end of Mike Madigan's hold on the legislature. And it does make a big difference if there are 3 or 4 more Republicans down there when they're trying to reach these in these budget negotiations. And Governor Rauner said all along, this is a long-term strategy. If we pick up 4 or 5 this time around, we get into a non-presidential year with the governor at the top of the ticket, probably as much money involved. Republicans do have a shot to take over the House, and for the first time in a long time, you know, the Republicans have an equal amount of resources to match the Democrats. And the point that David Yebsen made, the Democrats have always killed us on ground game, but not this year. We have some legislative districts. We have 30 paid staffers actually working the ground game. We've never had that before.
But having the staffers and then being able to roll out people who are actually on the ground to crank out the vote.
Exactly. And we have never had that like we have it now. And they've also done something differently that we didn't do 2 or 4 or 6 years ago. We are now doing door knocks, going door to door in a state representative race. You can win that race just on door knocks. And that's what they're ahead of door knocks. They have been since a couple months ago. Way ahead of the pace they had in the governor race, which was a historic rate.
We're speaking with, that's Pat Brady, former chairman of the Illinois Republican Party, Bob Sector, director of investigations for the BGA, and David Yebsen, retired director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute. We're going to take a quick break. We'll continue our discussion in this segment of the show about the Illinois legislative battles. Right now, though, quick break. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. It's 7:50 Central Standard Time on this Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson, and this is your Sunday Spin pre-election roundtable with Bob Sector, Pat Brady, and David Yebsen. And Pat was just talking about the long-term strategy of Republicans, and in fact, you know, throughout this, when we look at the legislative races, this kind of proxy war of that's going on between Rahner and Madigan over control of the legislature, and as David Yepsen mentioned about the fact that, you know, a number of these races are legislative races are being contested in southern Illinois. And in fact, you look at, and David in particular, I wanted to ask you about this. So you've got veteran State Senator Gary Forbee from Benton. He's being challenged by Republican Dale Fowler, who was mayor of Harrisburg. And this is the far southernmost state Senate district of the 59 state Senate districts. And the money that I had in this race from January 1 to October 31st in my count is $3.4 million. Now, David, you know I love Southern Illinois, but for $3.4 million, I think you could buy the entire 59th Senate district.
Well, the real winners of this race are the television and radio stations in the Southern Illinois media market, because you can buy a lot of advertising cheap.
Yeah, and that's the
washing this stuff, and has been since August.
Yeah, and that's kind of my point, is that unlike the Chicago market, you know, when you're looking at buying ads, you know, at the various affiliates in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, and Harrisburg, Illinois, and Paducah, Kentucky, perhaps even Terre Haute, you're not spending as much money per ad as it takes for, you know, one ad in Chicago.
No, and there's so many ads that I think a lot of people are hoping would just love to see a good old fashioned farm chemical ad. You know, talk about a little Treflin or something and break up the monotony.
Yes, and they're piling up. Plus, you have the fact in a district like that, and now, of course, you know, you may be buying some ads in St. Louis market, which is a bit more expensive. And, in fact, one of the top four Illinois House races of the four that are over $4 million is Democratic Representative Daniel Beezer of Alton against Republican Mike Babcock of Bethalto. That one's at $4.1 million, and part of that is due to the fact of having to buy ads in the St. Louis market. But in that, like, 59th district down there, you're not only dealing with ads for Illinois politicians, but you're dealing with ads for Missouri politicians.
Right, and there are spirited races for governor and for the U.S. Senate in Missouri, very tight races there, and so you're awash in those ads as well. You know, and it's interesting, looking at some of those, one of the more effective ones, I think, has been an independent expenditure ad by the Farm Bureau, which has endorsed, which is supporting John Bradley in a House race, where they actually tout his credentials as the chairman of the House Revenue Committee. And you're starting to hear some people say, you know, maybe it's good to have somebody who can pick up the phone and actually get the speaker on the phone and talk about the needs we have. And so I thought that was kind of an innovative take. I don't know whether they got enough on the air to make a whole lot of difference, but it sure was different than some of the other messaging we've heard, which, as Pat was describing, trying to make Mike Madigan the issue.
Yeah, and that John Bradley race, Bradley the Democrat from Marion, Dave Severin from Benton the Republican, that clocks in at seventh on the list of expensive House races at $3.2 million. We were talking off the air, Bob Sector and I, about just geographical differences and influences here. And so, you know, how does everything play out as far as, you know, turnout and the motivating factors for people in the vote?
Yeah, well, you've got a lot of different forces going on here. It's not just, if it was just a battle for legislative races, it would be a lot simpler than you could make the argument. But you've got Trump-Clinton on the ballot. You've got a U.S. Senate race. And the geographical differences in the state are playing, this is a very strong Hillary Clinton state. But geographically, I would suspect that down in southern Illinois, it's not. So some of those messages, those anti Democratic messages might play very well downstate. Question is whether they're going to play very well in the suburbs up here, and that's a real problem.
Well, and David,
well, yeah, the thing is, I think they do play well up here. And I grew up downstate and went to law school downstate, so I'm very familiar with the geographic differences. Trump very popular downstate, which I think is going to help downstate, and we're going to keep our seats down there. But up here, the speaker has an 18% approval rating, and a lot of people are really fed up. And if you look at the Paul Simon poll, we talked about this the other day with David Yepsen, that 85% of the state supports term limits and redistricting reform, which in any other year or any other state, people don't even understand. So I think there's a real hunger for change, and I think the Republicans have very effectively tied made the speaker the focus and made the speaker the problem, and I think it's going to be very effective in the suburbs.
That presumes that there's a very sophisticated thought process that goes in when you go in the booth or to the machine. And, you know, I doubt that a lot, especially when you also have 17 million judge votes that people don't even know what they are to wade through.
Sure, it's not just one factor. It's that, and then it's the ground game.
But there's the complication of that transference factor. But one thing quickly, David, I wanted to mention is, as much as Trump might be a supportive factor for Republicans downstate, we've talked about this before, the fact is, people downstate know their legislators in a much greater degree and perhaps even a more personal degree than is possible for voters up here in the metropolitan area.
That was the point I wanted to make. A lot of people know Gary Forby. He's been around for a long time down there. The one that to keep an eye on will be that Bradley Severin race, because there the Republicans are pretty confident that they've got a real shot because of what Pat was talking about. Trump does help bring out a Republican turnout. It keeps the Democratic turnout down. And Southern Illinois is becoming more and more like the rest of the Deep South, where conservative Republicans are beating conservative Democrats.
We're speaking to our political roundtable this morning. Bob Sector, Pat Brady, David Yepsen. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, we'll continue with our special pre-election political roundtable, talking about all the various legislative races. Please feel free to come and join the conversation, 312-981-7200, particularly if you have any questions about any of the candidates.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin, our special pre-election political roundtable. Just a personal note, you all know that I'm very supportive of a group called the Literacy Volunteers of Illinois, and today is their 13th annual Scrabble for Literacy Challenge, and that will be held at Grossinger Honda. That's at 6600 Northwestern Avenue. There's all kinds of Scrabble to be played. There's also prizes, silent auction items, including a chance to sit in on the Sunday Spin, get a look at Trib Tower, have brunch at Billy Goat, dinners, theater tickets, passes to Chicago attractions, and more. So that all begins at 1 o'clock. That's the Scrabble for Literacy Challenge at Grossinger Honda, 6600 Northwestern Avenue. You can check out more information and register by going to lvillinois.org. That's lvillinois.org. Well, it's been quite a final week in the presidential campaign. I was kind of interested. CNN played this interview with former New Hampshire Republican Senator Gordon Humphrey, and Humphrey had backed Ohio Governor John Kasich for president, as did Pat Brady. But Humphrey says, really, Trump should have been stopped.
They could have replaced Trump. They could have, if they'd had the courage. Every organization, the leadership of every organization, has an obligation to avert imminent disaster, and they could have done it. Hey, who wants some apples? We all had a year of unscripted Donald Trump before he learned how to read the teleprompter, and I think most of us got a pretty good idea what kind of a human being he is. And there was no way on earth that I could support him. There's one word, in my opinion, that sums him up. He's a creep.
That's that's former New Hampshire Republican Senator Gordon Humphrey. Well,
I've actually used stronger language.
Here on the Political Roundtable, that was Pat Brady, former chairman of the State Republican Party, Bob Sector, Director of Investigations for the Better Government Association, and David Yepsen, retired director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University at Carbondale. And gentlemen, just to close out our discussion from the last half hour about the legislative races, very quickly, who picks up seats? Republicans, Democrats, how many? And we're going to start with Pat.
And I'll give my disclaimer. I've been was wrong on Donald Trump for 539 days. Really wrong.
With that predicate.
I'm still waiting for my ambassadorship from President McCain. So here's my, I think four to five Republicans end up in the House net 4 to 5, maybe one or two in the Senate.
Okay. And okay. Bob?
And I'll give my disclaimer, which is different from his, which is I'm speaking for myself and not for the Better Government Association. This is just me and my ill-considered thought process going on here.
The one that you used to share with me at
yes,
the
that's right.
fourth floor of the Tribune. Yes.
The, I would suspect that even without all this spending, the Democrats were at their zenith in this session of the House. It was likely they were going to drop a seat or two. As I said before, it won't make much difference in the outcome this coming session of battles with Governor Rauner. And I suspect that that's pretty much the way it'll end up, a seat or two or maybe three, but not in the House. And in the Senate, maybe a couple as well. In the end, Democrats are still going to control the legislature, and obviously the governor's going to control the governor's office, and there's still going to be a stalemate.
And David?
I agree with Bob. And on both the House and the Senate, and I also think the 2018 race for governor begins on Wednesday.
Oh,
and the Democrats, having gone through this Rauner meat grinder, are going to be in no mood to sing kumbaya with him. And unfortunately, this state's budget gridlock may continue for a couple more years.
Yeah, I think actually we're already seeing in all of this the 2018.
Oh, the presidential election starts Wednesday.
Well, yeah, right. That's correct. There's no doubt about that.
In fact, well, there's been candidates in town already.
Oh, yes.
I think it already started.
Okay.
Well, let's switch gears here very quickly. And just for a couple of minutes, the state comptroller race, which is just seemed to have been lost in all of this in many respects. And here again, another Rauner-Madigan kind of proxy war. Leslie Munger, the Republican appointee of Bruce Rauner, appointed to the post when Judy Bart Topinka passed away before inauguration. Democrats made it a two-year special election. Susana Mendoza, the Chicago City Clerk, a former member of the House, is the Democratic candidate. I'm wondering, in some respects, if this isn't kind of like back when we used to elect the U of I Board of Trustees, and no one really knew who these people were, but it was a partisan office, and it set kind of a partisan gauge for a kind of partisan barometer of where the Illinois electorate is. Bob?
Yeah, I mean, it's just another extension of the proxy war. Mendoza has a kind of a funny commercial where she's asking people what the comptroller does, and they don't, you know, nobody really knows. And they're fighting for the ability to essentially write checks and manage the books, totally unglamorous. But it has been in the past a stepping stone to greater things, I suppose. And if there is such a thing as a greater thing in Illinois election politics, and so to that extent, maybe it's important. But people are going to be voting Rauner versus Madigan, I really think.
And David?
We did a poll. It's out of date now, but the 1st of October showed Mendoza at 40%, Munger at 32%, don't know at 24%. I think you're right. This is where people show their partisan stripes. And Mendoza, in a year like this, has to be given the edge.
I'll ask Pat.
Depends on the ground game. I agree that not a lot of people are tuned into this race, but it is a super important position in the state of Illinois. Do you want Mike Madigan writing the checks, or do you want Leslie Munger, who's virtually been endorsed by every newspaper, been a very competent and highly qualified controller and done a great job, or you want to give the keys to the kingdom back to Madigan? I mean, that's a big decision, and I think it all comes down to the ground game, and I suspect it's a lot tighter than some people think.
Qualified and competent controller. That sums up everything right there.
Well, listen, if you look at her resume and look at what she's
well,
done.
Well, no, I just mean probably, it's yeah. For I'm just saying no. it's that's a great bumper sticker.
Well, you know, that position that she has is extremely important, particularly in these budget battles. And she took a very courageous stand and told the legislatures, "You're not going to get paid until this budget battle's solved. You get back the line like everybody else." So I think she's been an outstanding controller.
Except for there is that theme that she's been running about no budget, no pay, which of course is unconstitutional. But don't let that get in the way of running for
anything.
Having
spent, Rick, a lot of time there, every day there's something unconstitutional, even if that is unconstitutional coming out of Springfield. It only seems to bother people when they're opposed to it.
Oh, well, now.
Now everybody's a constitutional scholar all of a sudden. That's unconstitutional.
Well, it's become very easy since everything seems to have to go to the Supreme Court these days.
That's another issue we can talk about. Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
But the big issue in the comptroller's race has been who's better at math.
All right. Well, there you go right there. All right. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Good Sunday morning. It's 8:19 Central Standard Time on this Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson. This is your Sunday Spin. We're doing a special pre-election roundtable with Pat Brady, Bob Sector, and David Yepsen. And gentlemen, let's talk about the United States Senate race here in Illinois. This has been one of we always talk about, you know, every election's unique, that kind of thing. And of course, this seems to be the most unique year in politics that we've ever seen when you start at the top of the ticket. But, you know, here we have this U.S. Senate race where for Republican U.S. Senator Mark Kirk, who's seeking a second term, it was already kind of going to be a difficult battle. It's a presidential year. He won in 2010, a non-presidential year, won by about 2 percentage points that year. But we know Illinois and its propensity to vote Democratic and larger Democratic turnout. We knew it was going to be difficult. And the Tribune on Friday, if you could get past the Cubs coverage, we had our U.S. Senate profiles there. And I thought, frankly,
that might be the least read Senate profile in the history of Senate profile.
I've written a few. There's a lot of competition there.
Well, but I'm also wondering, given the stakes that are at play in this race as part of Republicans trying to hold a Senate majority, Democrats trying to retake a Senate majority, and going into this thing, I think we all expected quite a lot more out of this thing. And there really isn't that much there. I mean, we kind of see what we've got here.
Well, a lot of the oxygen has been sucked out of the room by the legislative races, which are dominating the airwaves. We just haven't seen much about it.
But no outside money in big droves. And normally the outside money favors the Republican candidate.
Well, I think maybe it was just the national people figured just prioritizing. The good news is Trump has caught up a little bit in the last week or two, which has actually kept the Senate in play for us. There's a chance we can keep the Senate. And in 2018, I think there are 25 Democratic senators up. So if we lose it this time around, we're going to get it back in 18. So all in all, given the Trump disaster at the top of the ticket, we're going to come out being okay, I think.
David?
Yeah, I think one other thing. I think Republicans nationally sort of wrote off Mark Kirk early on. It is a Democratic state. It's a presidential year. It performs democratically. He's been sidelined and slowed down by his stroke, which has limited his ability to campaign as aggressively as he needed to. And so it has been lost in the shuffle. We had Duckworth at 48% and Kirk at 34% at the 1st of October, early October. Don't know at 12. So I think you've got a – the conventional wisdom is that Tammy Duckworth picks this up for the Democrats.
Well, and Bob, I mean, one of the things that we noted in our profiles was that Duckworth has been able to kind of step back on what you would expect for a fully charged kind of statewide U.S. Senate campaign.
Yeah, she's running a Rose Garden, for lack of a better word, Rose Garden strategy, and she's been able to. And for fair or not, sad or not, Kirk has the stroke has maybe exaggerated or impaired him in some way, but he clearly has some impulse control problems, and those have come out like in the debates, and it doesn't help him politically.
Well, and I've noted that, you know, and his doctors say he's got full cognitive recovery from that 2012 stroke, and that you know, who can ascertain about that issue? He denies that there's any loss of filter or anything of that nature, but certainly, you know, when you're running for the U.S. Senate and running for re-election, and it is the scrutiny gets much more intense.
Sure, and you know, you've got this kind of strange year where the U.S. Senate candidate, the Republican or the incumbent U.S. senator, says some pretty strange and sometimes offensive things. However, the Republican presidential candidate says in an avalanche of strange and impulsive and obnoxious things, and apparently that's okay. I'm not trying to suggest that Kirk is trying to do this, because he's not, but there is a sort of a difference here, in a Democratic state, it doesn't play well.
You know, Mark Kirk, I've been working on his campaigns for 12 years, and they always say he's going to lose. Always say he's going to lose, and he always wins. So we'll wait and see what happens Tuesday night. And, you know, another reason, thing I think that Mark's got a shot is, why would you not vote for him? He's been a good senator. He's worked across the aisle. He's worked on issues that are important to the state. He's a fiscal conservative and a social moderate. He really fits the state well, and he's a proven commodity. So I'm not so sure that he might not win tomorrow, Tuesday night.
But I do want to ask you this, Pat. I mean, even going back to your time as chairman and whatever, there has always been some tension within the party among conservatives that, you know, didn't think that they didn't like Mark Kirk because he was a social moderate. And you know, back in the time when Kirk kind of was part of the, I guess, even Jim Edgar kind of style of what people expected as an Illinois Republican, and now the party may have shifted, the ideology of the party has shifted, and then you have the Trump factor on top of that, where, you know, you want to hold a base, but the base wasn't necessarily always there to begin with.
Yeah, but the reality is you get out of the primary and you have to win in a diverse state like Illinois, and Mark has always, Senator Kirk, always been positioned perfectly, being a fiscal conservative and a social moderate, perfect for the state. I mean, he was one of the leaders on the marriage equality in the country, coming out in support of that. He also, in this Supreme Court nomination, he actually stepped out and said, hey, we got to give this Merrick Garland a shot. We can't just say no to everything. So I think he's been a very good and effective senator because he's been a leader and has staked out that ground that fits Illinois perfectly. He fiscal conservative, social moderate. That's what Illinois voters want, and that's why I think he's really got a shot Tuesday, because that's where he stayed.
But especially with, like, the Merrick Garland example, and yes, he first senator to sit down and meet with him, said he was eminently qualified, said there should be hearings.
Sure.
But, you know, when you allow certain members of a party to give them room to freelance, but you know it's not going to change anything.
Well, maybe that's a bigger question that we're going to face after this election Wednesday morning, where the party needs and wants to go. Are we going to be the party of Donald Trump, or are we going to be a party more like Mark Kirk and people that want to get things done and believe that you don't have to be ideologues and hardcore conservatives and still be a Republican? And I think that's what we're struggling with right now.
And I think we're going to even go further on that question in the next segment of the show. But first, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Up ahead on this special pre-election edition of The Sunday Spin, we're going to continue with our political roundtable of Bob Sector, Pat Brady, and David Yepsen as we address the top marquee race, the race for the White House, Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton. That's up ahead on The Sunday Spin.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's The Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning, 8:35 Central Standard Time. Hope you all changed your clocks. New ABC Washington Post poll out. Hillary Clinton 48%, Donald Trump 43%. Some of these recent polls show that things stabilizing, although when you start going into the battleground states, things are getting very tight, and that's being reflected in the candidates' travels in these final hours. Kind of an interesting thing happening the other day where There was a Donald Trump protester at a Hillary Clinton rally in North Carolina where President Obama was the speaker. And Donald Trump, at his event, was talking about how President Obama was shouting down this protester and trying to shut him off. And actually, I wanted to play, this is the audio from that North Carolina event where Obama tells the audience to stop focusing on a protester.
I told you to be focused, and you're not focused right now. Listen to what I'm saying. Hold up. Hold up. Hold up. Hold up. Everybody sit down and be quiet for a second. Everybody sit down and be quiet for a second. Now listen up. I'm serious. Listen up. You've got an older gentleman who is supporting his candidate. He's not doing nothing. You don't have to worry about him. You should. This is what I mean about folks not being focused. First of all, hold up. First of all, we live in a country that respects free speech. So, second of all, it looks like maybe he might have served in our military, and we got to respect that. Third of all, he was elderly, and we got to respect our elders. And fourth of all, don't boo. Boo! Don't boo. Boo! Come on.
So you have the Donald Trump interpretation of events, and you have the tape.
That's kind of the story of this candidacy.
Well, Bob Sector.
Yeah, he's turned truth upside down, and it's a problem for politics. It's a problem for the country. It's a problem for the media. It's a problem for partisanship, and we all have played a part in enabling a man who, quite frankly, and I'm going to show my prejudice here, and I disclaim it, this has nothing to do with the BGA, there's a direct line between Joseph McCarthy and Donald Trump. And that direct line is a guy named Roy Cohn, who was the lawyer for McCarthy and was the mentor to Donald Trump. The big lie. And that's what the campaign is.
David, I've often talked about David Yepsen. I've often talked about how this year has been the most difficult year for many journalists because, our motto is you seek objectivity, but that's a goal. The best I tell everybody is I'm going to try to be fair. But that having been said, when you do deal with a candidate that does utter falsehoods, you have to also tell the truth.
Yeah, and I think after this election, there's going to be a lot of introspection in both media circles as well as in both parties about this nominating process. For one thing, one of the problems with the media, and I count myself as part of the media.
I still count you as that, yes.
I mean, that Donald Trump was treated as a celebrity at the beginning. Not enough people were doing what Bob suggested, which is scrutinize what he was saying and his positions. And he was treated as a celebrity. I mean, the Huffington Post put him on the entertainment pages. And that I think, enabled him to dominate news coverage when the rest of the Republicans were out there starving for attention. And so I think there's got to be some reforms and things. And I'll give you one specific one that I'd like to see in 4 years. If we have large fields of candidates, and we may, we need to assign positions in debates, not by polls, but by lottery. Because otherwise you're going to have Kim Kardashian running, and she's going to run away with the polls and get that poll position in a debate, and we're off to the races again. We have to figure out how to cover celebrity candidates who say outrageous things. Trump has done well, even though he's probably not going to win. He's done well, and that's going to create imitator candidates all up and down the ballot, and media people have to figure out all right, how are we gonna treat this individual?
Before I turn to Pat Brady, we've got a call from Ron. Ron, welcome as always to the Sunday Spin.
Yes, good morning, Rick, and to your guests. Question, guys, the thing that I'm really looking forward to, I think is really most fascinating, is what happens to Republican Party. Typically, women can reconcile, different-style problems. But if he loses, just the whole relationship with the established Republican parties who didn't support Donald Trump last year, these movements usually can kind of go away after elections. But I want to get you all's opinion, just the direction of the Republican Party going forward after Tuesday. Thanks, Rick.
And I've turned to Pat Brady on that one.
Hey, Ron. Well, let me first say the Democrats are going to have a huge problem when President Clinton becomes President Clinton, because you have the Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders wing of the Senate that are going to be very vocal. And Bernie Sanders, a 74-year-old socialist, came closer to winning the nomination than Hillary Clinton did in 2008. So she's got big problems on her left flank. And the Democratic Party has gone just as far to the left as the base of the Republican Party has gone to the right. So both parties are going to have a problem. And so far as the Republicans, what I would like to see and what we talked about in 2012 after we lost, we need to become a more inclusive party. We need to recognize the fastest growing voting bloc is Hispanics. We need to be more in tune with young people and their needs and interests. And we need to talk about solutions like we did in 1980. Remember in 1980, I think it was Daniel Patrick Moynihan said, the Republican Party is the party of big ideas. We no longer are.
But has Ron, hold on 1 second. But has Reince Priebus kind of forfeited that position at the RNC? Because it was he who did the autopsy following 2012 that talked about inclusiveness, expansion, growing the party. And yet, he obviously he's in that difficult position of being the RNC chair, and you have to support your nominee.
My opinion, I was on that committee for 4 or 5 years, that everyone on that committee, with the exception of our national committee man here, needs to resign. They would not have allowed Reince to do anything about Trump, because I remember I used to go to the RNC meetings. I was the youngest one in the room, and I'm 55 years old. It's time for that committee to be completely reformed, because they do have a lot of power, but it is way out of touch and way out of tune, I think, with the general electorate voters. Reince did everything he could to have a fair process, which is what his obligation was. But that committee needs to be completely blown up after this election.
Very, very quickly, Ron. David?
What I was going to add to that, Rick, is I think the Republicans they got it right in that autopsy. Many of the things that were said in there will have to be done as a result of this election. Donald Trump is doing well because he's carrying the votes of non-college white independent men. Their problems are not going to go away regardless of the election. We still have an income gap in this country. We still have people who are left behind regardless of who wins. So something has to be done about that. But also, Hillary Clinton is winning by picking up minority votes, particularly Hispanic votes in some of these battleground states. So, for example, Iowa, where I come from, Trump is ahead by 7 points. Why? Largely older, rural, white voters, but this race is much more competitive in places like Arizona and North Carolina and Florida. And Pat's right. The Republican Party has got to figure out a way to get a message of inclusion to Hispanic voters instead of going out of its way to turn them away from the Republican Party.
But, Bob, when you look at, for example, Paul Ryan, still going to be Speaker of the House, most likely.
Maybe.
Most likely. But given that, though, it's kind of like, look at that caucus.
Yeah, he's got a big problem. How can he rule his caucus? And, and Pat's right about this. The Republican Party has moved ever more rightward. The Democratic Party has moved ever more leftward. And where you actually govern is in the middle. And I don't know how you satisfy either of those sides in this kind of climate.
Well, let's take another look at, though, as far as what the Republicans have done in the last 8 years. We picked up 900-some legislative seats. We have 30 governorships. We have the House and the Senate, largest majority in the House since 1920. So there is a message there that works at the local level, but we just can't be at the top of the ticket so nasty like Trump has been. He's really set back what we were trying to do in
2012. Yeah, but you know what's interesting about what you said? You're absolutely right. The Republican Party has picked up both locally and in Congress those seats. But go back to something you said early in the show about Illinois being gerrymandered.
Oh, absolutely.
The reason Republicans have done it is there are far more gerrymandered states for Republicans than for Democrats. And, you know, you look at Texas is the absolute worst example of gerrymandering in the country.
Next to Illinois.
No.
Yes, the Seventh Circuit called it blatantly political.
All right. On that note, we're going to take a quick break. This is our pre-election Sunday Spin political roundtable. We'll be back with more right after this. Back with our pre-election political roundtable on the Sunday Spin, Bob Sector, Pat Brady, and David Yepsen. And it's prediction time, gentlemen, and you can do it by electoral college vote, or by popular vote, and finally, who's going to be the next president of the United States? And David, start with you.
Well, Hillary Clinton, with 274 electoral votes.
That's kind of close.
Yeah, well, all right, 274. I don't know, the percentage, maybe 3 or 4 points.
All right. Pat Brady.
320, Secretary Clinton, 320 electoral votes, probably closer to 4 or 5. We'll know very early because it depends, those East Coast states, Florida, North Carolina. If Virginia goes big for Secretary Clinton, we'll be done by about 8:45.
Bob Sector.
Okay. When you told us we were going to do this, I immediately Googled Nate Silver's website.
I want to point out that a week ago on this program, just to remind everybody, and I have no problem with Nate, and I think he does a great job, but it was a week ago where he predicted that the Cubs' chances of getting the World Series were less than Donald Trump's chances of getting the White House. He had the Cubs at 15%. And I think he had Trump about 32%.
Hey, can we put some money on this, like a goat burger or something?
We can talk about that after the show, all right? But, okay. Bob?
I think Chris Bryant will win. No, I'm sorry. You know, I believe that Clinton will prevail both in the popular vote and electoral college. Who knows what I think. We'll be back next week to say how stupid we all are. But she's going to probably win by 3 or 4% in the popular vote and come up with about 290, 300 in the electoral vote.
Well, we will be back for the roundtable. We'll be back next week to talk more about this. But I'm just curious about the one factor about Republican turnout and energy. And, you know, we've been talking about how, as far as suburban moderate Republican women, and they're kind of they're always a big question mark in elections, particularly in Illinois. But where are they going to turn out? But I'm kind of curious, too, the whole issue of the African-American turnout on the Democratic side and the questions about the energy that exists for Hillary Clinton.
You know, along the lines of energy of who's going to turn out, I think this campaign on both sides, Secretary Clinton and Donald Trump, have done so much damage to the institutions of this country. Donald Trump questioning the integrity of the election process, Hillary Clinton attacking the FBI director. I've never seen institutions that we badly need to function as a democracy be attacked like these two have. So I think those kind of campaigns tend to drive down turnout everywhere.
Bob?
You know,
Go ahead, David.
I was just going to say, I think the energy right now is with Trump. I think Secretary Clinton was moving along quite well before the FBI director decided to get involved in the campaign and just deflated a lot of the energy that they have. You're seeing, look at the yard sign wars. I mean, we all pay attention to that. Trump is clearly winning something there. There's a lot more energy, just it seems like, in the trouble among Trump people than there is on the Democratic side. And that could be a problem on some of the down ballot things. I know the Clinton people are very worried about African American turnout not being what it was in 2008, 2012 for Barack Obama. That explains a lot of what she's doing here in the closing days. So that's where the Democrats have got to get some energy going.
Bob Sector.
Yeah, I do think that, you know, Trump voters are going to turn out come hell or high water. They may not have. Because he doesn't have a great organization. They haven't been showing great energy in the early vote, but I think on Tuesday they're going to show up. She's She's much more organized. She got a big bump from the early vote, which is a relatively new factor in elections and makes it a little harder to project what's going on. But, you know, I do think her early vote operation, her organization, will probably trump Trump.
Well, and speaking of early vote, by the way, Chicago Board of Elections advises that if you want to early vote, early voting continues in Illinois up and through Monday, obviously Tuesday being Election Day. But if you want to vote early, Chicago Board of Elections advises, as always, that Sunday is the best day to go do it. And also, the polling places will be open until 7 p.m. So it's time to make your decision if you haven't done so already. I think we've seen 1.2 million people in Illinois have already cast their early vote. We've had an expansion of the days before election which early voting can be conducted. And so 1.2 million already out of more than 8 million people registered to vote. Also, unique feature again this year is that we have same-day registration so that you can register to vote on Tuesday if you're not already registered or update your registration. You can do that on Tuesday and cast your vote. But again, election officials advise if you want to do anything involving registration, do it today or do it tomorrow. Don't try to do it on Tuesday just because it may complicate things while the votes are being counted. Well, gentlemen, I want to thank all of you for joining me on the roundtable, and you'll be back next week.
I'll be back. If I was right, I'll be back next week.
Yes, see there. Okay.
He'll keep you in suspense.
Everything.
Profile and courage.
There's always a predicate with you, Brady. I don't understand. I want to thank all three of you. Bob Sector, Director of Investigations from the BGA. Pat Brady, former chairman, Illinois Republican Party with Next Generation Strategies. And David Yepsen, retired director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University at Carbondale. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Well, that's all we have time for on this week's edition of The Sunday Spin. I want to thank all of you for listening. I hope you've all gotten more informed. Don't just take our words or the words of the people here on our pre-election panel as the word to listen to. Go read. There's all kinds of stories in the newspapers today about all the candidates, but please go exercise your right to vote. And with that, I'm going to turn things over to the great Dean Richards, who's out at Tree Time in Lake Barrington.
Yes, we are Tree Time on Pepper Road in Barrington, and what a crowd we have out here. I am estimating 5 million people out here.
We have the city estimate.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8. Yep, 5 million.
More people on the route.